Hi, my name is Allison Mead, and welcome to What She Said, an episode of the LA FPI's podcast series. The Los Angeles Female Playwrights Initiative is dedicated to encouraging and promoting the work of female playwrights. And today I'm going to be speaking with Elena Hartwell, whose play, A Strange Disappearance of Bees, is currently playing at the Raven Playhouse in North Hollywood. Elena's work has been seen across the country and in the UK. Her recent productions include A Strange Disappearance of Bees with Oldcastle Theatre Company and the Detroit Repertory Theater. Driftwood Players workshopped A Fugue Unfinished in February after readings with Eris Productions and Last Frontier Theater Conference, pretty cool. Additional projects include Pictures of Jane, commissioned by Greenville Technical College, Endless Sea with Mad Lab, and Family Matters, A Story of Hope, commissioned by Abused Deaf Women's Advocacy Services, performed in ASL, and I wish we had a whole separate conversation just to talk about that, but I did want to welcome you, Elena.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Absolutely. Well, I want to begin with the central metaphor in your play, which is bees and colony collapse disorder. Mm-hmm. So I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that, what that means, first of all, and then explain how it pertains to the themes of the play.
Yeah. You know, it's a really interesting thing that's going on with the bees, and it is becoming a little more public, so a little more people are aware of it. But what's happening is whole colonies are disappearing, and scientists don't know why. And so they're calling it colony collapse disorder because it seems to be sort of a group of things that are happening simultaneously. And it's everything from pesticides to perhaps cell phone intervention with their ability to navigate. Recently, an article came out about diesel exhaust may keep them from being able to smell, so they can't find food. And then the issues of monocrops and mites. So it's a huge number of things are all impacting these bees and causing them to disappear. And I had read about that or heard about it on the radio and got sort of intrigued by how invisible that process is. First, we don't really see bees unless you're really looking for them, even though they're all around us. We don't necessarily see them, but they're so integral to our survival and to the food that we eat. And so then I started thinking about how that connected to the human experience in that people sometimes disappear, both figuratively and literally, and it can be for so many of those similar reasons. They get isolated by technology. They get cancer from chemicals or pesticides. They lose their way, you know, they can't find their way home. And so that all of the characters in the play have a connection or a relationship or a parallel to one of those things that is impacting the bees. And then one of the characters is a beekeeper, and that's her job in life and what she wants to be doing. And so with her, it's a very concrete example because she is a beekeeper, and her work life is linked with them. But then the other characters have these parallels.
Well, we first meet Robert, who's an Amerasian man who shows up at his father's bakery kind of looking for some information about his past. Yeah. I wondered how you could talk about how this central character came about and how you had him drive the narrative forward.
Yeah, I have done a lot of writing about veterans and post-traumatic stress disorder and the experience of veterans, but I'm also interested in sort of the larger question of how a veteran and their experiences fit into the world. And so I've had other characters in the past, of what happens when you have a soldier who goes over to another country and is engaged in a war and has a relationship with someone who lives there, and out of that comes a child, and what happens to that child. And there's some really interesting things with children of American veterans in Vietnam, which, of course, my character is born in the United States, but the children that were born in Vietnam were really neither American nor Vietnamese, and they had a really hard time. And that's sort of clear cut, like it was really hard for them. So I started thinking about, well, what does it mean in the United States? And so here was a man whose mother had horrible experiences in the war, has come to the United States, can't stay with the man who fathers her child, and so she leaves him. Well, she's now neither Vietnamese nor American. She wants him to be an American, so she doesn't allow him sort of the connection to his own roots of his country. So he becomes a very isolated person. His mother will only speak to him in English, and her English isn't good, and you think, wow, what kind of a dynamic is that for a child to not be able to really fully communicate with his mother in her native tongue? And also it rejects that side of himself, of where his roots are. And so, you know, in a lot of plays you have either a stranger comes into a community or a person leaves a community and goes into a strange place. I mean, those two models happen a lot. In my particular play, it is a community where the stranger comes in, and it is the entrance of that stranger which launches the story. And so Robert is not only a stranger in a strange land in the sense of coming into this small community that he's not familiar with, but he's a stranger in his own land in that he doesn't fit anywhere. He's not any one thing, and he doesn't have any one group that he fits in with. And so he's sort of doubly a stranger in a strange land, and that's what then launches the story. So that's how he sort of drives the narrative.
Mm. Well, since this is a podcast for playwrights or aspiring playwrights, either or, I'd love to talk a little bit about your process as a writer for this particular play. What came first for you? Was it that central metaphor of the bees or the characters, the idea of shifting back and forth in time?
Yeah, this was a really different play for me in so many ways. It was sort of exciting to write it because it was so different. So the thing that came first was the beekeeper has a series of monologues that are scattered throughout the play, and I really started with her monologues and just sort of her description of what was happening to the bees. And so that's really where it started. But while I was writing those monologues, I sort of had the story was in my head about who are these characters and what's going on in their personal lives. And I like to write plays which are a personal story against the backdrop of something larger. Mm. And so then I started writing the scenes. And what was so unusual about this writing process is that I totally changed the order of the scenes between the first draft and the first production, and then made changes even after, and I've made changes after every production. And at one point I had a wall in my house, and I had it covered with these 3x5 index cards with the, the monologue about X and the scene about X, you know, and I had that on the wall, and I would just look at it and go, oh, you know, this monologue fits better after this scene, and I realized early on, oh, the monologues are weighted too heavy in Act 1, and so I started moving monologues around, and then I would realize, oh, this scene is really linked to this monologue, so this scene should get moved, and because it does go back and forth in time, and it's a nonlinear play, I really played around with what works best in terms of how we hear the story, and what I learned as I was doing it is that some characters, you see their stories from the present forward. Some characters you learn from the present in reverse.
Ah.
And some characters it's back and forth. And I found that really, I was sort of surprised. It sort of took me by surprise that's what was going on. And so it ended up being this really visual exercise for me in that I had to sort of almost map the play. And I didn't necessarily rewrite the scenes, but I really moved the order around. So that was
really
different.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was really new.
That was my next question, was really, because we jump back and forth in time and span several decades in the process, I wondered what other kinds of challenges that presented to you as a playwright. And you kind of answered a little bit of that already with needing to map the play. What else came up for you?
Yeah, it was really challenging. And, it was this combination of, it's always sort of interesting to me about when does an audience member know something? When does a character know something? When do other characters, because sometimes audience knows things that characters don't, and sometimes characters know things that other characters don't. And so that is really intriguing to me. And I realized, with the scene that it ends up being almost at the end of the play, like the poignancy of being an audience member and watching a scene of a character at the very beginning of the story. So you're at the end of the play, but you're seeing a scene which would exist linearly at the beginning of the story, and a character is talking about what he wants, and you realize, you know, he never gets it.
Mm.
And so what really struck me in playing with this was I was how to maximize the moments and the manipulation, and I mean that in a good way, not in a bad way, but the manipulation of the audience knowing what the characters don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really interesting and a challenge because, I would realize, oh, if we see this after we've seen something in the past, it has more impact. And so to try to sort of maximize that was definitely a challenge. And then just I had the funniest combination of things of like I would write a scene and to me it would be really clear it was past or present. And I would do readings and people like, well, was that present or was that past? And so I started doing that sort of Shakespearean thing of people, you know, walking in and sort of declaring, you know, when in time it was and how do we get around, you know, like making things really clear. And so I was surprised with this play how much I had to do with that. And I think it is because of the jumping around in time. So that was challenging, too, to sort of be clear about, okay, this is, you know, in the past or this is in the present.
Fascinating. Well, A Strange Disappearance of Bees also is a play of tremendous loss, but it has a pretty equal amount of hope. So I wondered how it was for you as a playwright balancing those two pretty strong emotions.
I love that you asked that question, and I will tell you on personal a personal note, which is the first draft of the play was not so hopeful. And I had been through a really rough time, really sort of a really hard year. I had a lot of really bad sort of difficult things that I had to overcome. But during that process, I met the man who's now my husband. And during the rewrites, as my life got better, the play got more hopeful.
Wow, that's fascinating. Okay.
Yeah, so it definitely was my, you know, and I don't want to give anything away in the play, but there is a hopeful part in the play which actually came about between the first and second drafts. And so, yeah, anyone who sees the play will realize, oh, that's what she was talking about. So there is a little hopeful event that happens in the play about the bees, and that wasn't true when I wrote the first draft. And so things were changing in the real world as well. But the biggest thing for me was just that my life was more hopeful, and so I found ways that the play became more hopeful as well.
Yeah, it never feels tacked on. It feels it's a kind of a tenuous but good balance.
Good.
That's really interesting.
I'm really pleased to hear that because, you know, I really do think that life is that way. I think that, you know, we're constantly balancing the good and the difficult. And so I like plays that sort of reflect that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, lastly, just to wrap up, I always like to ask people whatever they're up to next. You're running here in L.A. through November 17th, I think.
Yeah.
And then what's up next for you?
Well, I have I have two plays that are sort of in two different parts of the process, and so one is a play which is really ready for a production. It's had a lot of readings. It's had a workshop in up near where I live, and it's really done and ready to go into rehearsals. And so I have a tentative maybe on that, and I'm hoping hope that that's going to be a yes, and it will have a full production next year. And so I'm sort of, you know, working on that one, and I'm also sending it other places with the hope that there's some interest. And then the second play is, it could go into rehearsal, but it probably really is more ready for a workshop. It's had readings, but it's sort of ready to be played with on its feet with a group of actors and a director, you know, in more of a workshop rather than just a reading. And so I have, again, I have some maybes on that one, and so I'm sort of hoping that that happens, but also sort of shopping that around. And then I also work in fiction, and so I have some manuscripts that I'm showing to some agents and things like that right now. So sort of a lot going on, but it's all, you know, it's all that. Well, maybe this is going to happen.
Well, any kind of teasers of little plot points or themes that you want to drop into the conversation?
Well, my play, A Few Good Finished, I like to call my feel-good play about dementia.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which it's actually a very funny play, but it is about dementia. And so that one I sort of love the play, and I love that kind of dichotomy of it is really funny, but again, it's underlaid with this just really difficult thing that people face, both the person who's dealing with it, but I think more impacted are the people around that person with dementia. And then the second play is definitely not a feel-good play. It is about alcoholism and drug abuse. So I'm not quite sure how I got quite so serious on that particular play. But I keep thinking, oh, there's got to be some humor in here. But it's not quite coming out. So it's definitely a more serious play. So those are the two scripts that I'm working on right now.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today and wishing you lots of luck with your run.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
A Strange Disappearance of Bees runs at the Raven Playhouse in North Hollywood from October 18th, that's today, through November 17th. It's a production of Collaborative Artist Ensemble and stars Christian T. Chan, Brian A. Pollock, Meg Wallace, Marsha Waterbury, and Ian Patrick Williams. The play is directed by Stephen Gerard. Please visit www.plays411.com/bees, B-E-E-S, or call 323-860-6569 to purchase tickets. For more information about LAFPI's resources, activities, and opportunities, please visit www.lafpi.com.